Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast. That's the sound of sunshine coming down. Edition, as the Bengals hit their bye week on a high note after ending the first half of the season with a victory over the 5-1 Tennessee Titans. Coming up, Dave Lapham joins me to discuss the latest Bengals news, plus we'll hand out first half of the season awards like MVP, biggest surprise, and biggest disappointment, complete with some spiffy award show background music. And since Joe Burrow has officially been the big story of the season to date, we'll discuss his play so far with a pair of former NFL quarterbacks, Phil Sims and JT O'Sullivan. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since snack-sized candy bars. There's a lot of candy left over in the Hoard household after Halloween, and it's all what's labeled on the bag as snack-sized. I'll admit it, we're not the much-loved house in the neighborhood that hands out full-sized candy bars on Halloween, but we do give each kid a few different snack-sized bars for the variety. The point of all this is that I don't really need a full-size candy bar. For example, one Reese's Peanut Butter Cup does the trick, and I don't feel guilty for eating it. Of course, with all of the leftover candy we have in the house, I wind up grabbing several over the course of the day, but at least in theory, the snack-size candy bar is perfectly satisfying. Now, let's get to football. The Bengals hit the halfway point of the season with a record of 2-5-1, but the second half includes several games that look extremely winnable as they face the 2-5 Washington football team, the 2-6 Cowboys, the 1-6 Texans, and the 1-7 Giants. And keep in mind that the Bengals took the lead to the fourth quarter in six of their first eight games, so a strong second half seems very possible. This is the Bengals' bye week, and it was also NFL trade deadline week. The deadline was Tuesday at 4 p.m., and that's where I start this week's conversation with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Big news broke about 11 minutes after the deadline. The Bengals have added Brian Allen to the practice squad. He's appeared in 17 NFL games. So that was the only news on the day of the trade deadline. It came and went. John Ross is still here. Were you surprised?
Not shocked. Not totally shocked, because honestly, as we saw with the offensive line, he's an injury away from being a factor. You know, and if you've got guys that know your system and you can plug right in with COVID, you know, everything that goes along with bringing guys off of other football teams and protocols and everything. I guess number one, there was no value that they, or there wasn't, nobody felt that he was worth what the Bengals thought he was worth. Obviously, if they were trying to trade him and couldn't do it, particularly with the fact that, okay, if there is an injury, we can use him. So you got to offer me more than what you're offering. And maybe they didn't get much of any offer at all. So they decided stand pat and finish the season with John Ross, and he'll be going elsewhere after the season. People are going to be, oh, why didn't you move John Ross and get something? You don't know what there was offered, if anything. That's the big deal. That's the big question. So that's, and then Billy Price, you know, was another one that people might have been thinking about a little bit, and you just give him a game ball, and he's playing pretty well. Trey Hopkins, who was out there at practice today, I stopped by after picking up some media information for the bye week and for the Pittsburgh upcoming football game. And Bobby Hart was on the rehab field. Jonah Williams was on the rehab field. Joe Mixon was on the rehab field. But Trey Hopkins was out there doing things. They weren't doing much, the part of practice we were able to watch. But he was out there, as well as Michael Jordan was out there. So they were lining up, you know, at their respective positions. But without those two tackles out there on the rehab field, you had Adeniji was lined up at the left tackle position, and Big Fred was lined up at the right tackle position as they were going through things early stages of practice.
Unfortunately, this time of year, we can't watch much of practice, but I would be very interested to know how John Ross is going to handle this. He publicly has come out asking for a trade. If you're not going to use me, trade me. That's understandable. On the other hand, is he going to mope? Is he going to show up but go through the motions? Or at some point, is he going to say, basically, screw you. I'm better than Mike Thomas, or I'm better than Alex Erickson, whoever he thinks he's better than in his own mind. Maybe he thinks he's better than Tyler Boyd. Who knows? But is he going to have that attitude? You know what? I've got 8 games left here. I'm going to be a free agent at the end of this season. I'd like to get a good offer from somebody. I'm going to go out there, bust my tail at practice in hopes that maybe I'll get the opportunity to do something.
Well, I think his agent has probably said, look, the trade deadline passed. You didn't get traded. Don't do anything to hurt your value worse. You know, just go out and do what they're asking you to do. He was out there at practice today with a helmet and pads on just like everybody else. The, you know, the little tiny shoulder pads. It wasn't a physical day today, obviously, at all. And, you know, bottom line is, if you do have your opportunity, get ready to capitalize on it. The thing that he should do is watch the offensive line, what those guys did. All 5 of them get a chance to shine, or 4 of the 5. Alex Redmond, who I thought played his best game of the year against Tennessee. He was knocking people around, man. I'm telling you, he in Spain, when they were double-teaming those down linemen, they were moving those guys. And I'm telling you, watching tape, prepping for that Tennessee, Simmons was a load. People weren't moving him. I mean, they moved him against his will, and they moved him on both sides of it. You know, Spain and Redmond working Billy Price. Oh, man, it was like, yeah, I like that.
I can see the twinkle in your eye.
Man, I'm telling you. Get a little movement, boys. Make those linebackers have to move around things or put them in their lap. That was all good. So take your cue from them. Look at what they did. They were ready. You know, they practiced hard. They studied in the meetings. They did the extra work, trying to get themselves better. When your opportunity presents itself, capitalize. Don't be in a situation where you can't take advantage of your opportunity, because that's only going to enhance his opportunity as a free agent. If more than one team's interested in you when you're done with the Bengals, you know, it's just market, whatever the market will bear. Right now, there wasn't much of a market, or wasn't much on the market in terms of the Bengals' eyes, again, to say, we're going to just let him go for nothing or whatever. We're not going to cut him. We'll wait till the season's over and see how it all goes down. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast. That's the way it is in the National Football League. And, you know, today, he was over his illness. There was no illness today. He was out there running around. Everything was fine. No problems whatsoever. I wonder, the Michael Jordan thing, though, is a little bit scary. You know, Michael Jordan, I don't know if it was flu, migraines, food poisoning, whatever it was, but he went down there to the stadium, and they sent him to the hospital.
Hmm.
And it wasn't COVID-19. They knew it wasn't COVID-19 related. He had tested, and, you know, there was nothing there. But he had something cooking, something going on, so it was a major issue. But he was out there today, which was good sign. Trey Hopkins, in the early stages, very early stages, he was kind of standing in the back of everything. But he had his helmet on and ready to go. And then once they started going through some plays, he jumped right in there at his center position. And, you know, Billy Price was obviously there doing his work today, as was this is the guy that I'm really intrigued, B.J. Finney. I wonder if they threw his name out there and said, you know what, anybody interested in B.J. Finney? You know, we don't need 3 centers necessarily. They can all play guard, but their best position is center. When Finney – you know, when he jumped there in there for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I mean, they have a Pro Bowl center who goes down and he steps in there. I thought he played his tail off. I thought he played really well.
That's why I got a big deal from Seattle this offseason.
No doubt. And for whatever reason, you know, it fell apart out there. I think it was the same thing. Spain signs a big deal. Finney signs a big deal. They're not starters. Got a little ashy.
Sure.
A little bit antsy, you know, between the organization decided, let's just move on.
Well, suddenly there's actually a glut of offensive linemen. Who would have thought that
right. On
the Bengals roster? But you got the 4 tackles, Jonah, Bobby Hart, Fred Johnson, and Hakeem Adeniji. And then you've got this massive pile of interior guys, mm-hmm. Trey Hopkins, Billy Price, Michael Jordan, Alex Redmond, Quentin Spain, B.J. Finney, Xavier Suofilo is expected to be back sometime soon. Keaton Sutherland still on the main roster. Shaq Calhoun is back on the practice squad. But that's 9 interior guys. Now, you can have veterans on the practice squad. So you can hold on to these guys. But, man, that's a lot of guys.
Right, you can protect number of your practice squad players in Spain, since he was on the practice squad, active for the game, went back to the practice squad. You know, they've got him protected. Who knows how it all, shakes down. Honestly, next week's practice is going to be interesting because, you know, there's two schools of thought. And here's the interesting dichotomy as such that the Bengals are facing, because I'm sure over the last year and a half, the offensive line coaches were saying to the owners, we can't have this revolving door. You know, left tackle, that was ridiculous. We need to get five guys and let five guys work together and five guys become one. You know, like you're making a fist, four fingers, wrap the thumb, curl the four fingers. That's the way we want to play. Now, all of a sudden, you have five guys that show up in this game and they show they can play. Well, you know what? We'd like to play a lot of guys because we get guys capable of playing. And that's the difference. When they were saying to the organization, we need to get five guys and hopefully live through a five guy. They didn't have five guys. They didn't have enough guys to fill out an offensive line. Now, as you say, there's a glut and these guys can all play. And there's not, I don't think there's a huge difference between hardly any of them. I think they're all capable NFL starters. You can only have five, quote, starters. And to me, starter, it's so overused, whatever. But I know it's contract-related and all that, and it's dollars and cents. But if you have seven or eight linemen that can play, play them. If they're all good enough to play, play them. Hmm. So all you know, it's like, all right, well, Michael Jordan, you know, you're going to play the first three series. Spain, you're in for a series. On the right side, you know, Alex, you're going to go a couple of series, and Xavier, you're going to go a series, and then we'll see. And then just because if you have a utility player in baseball who can play, you don't go 20, 25 games without them doing anything. So you have linemen that show they can play, and that's good. So if a guy gets dinged or a guy's ineffective, boom, you make a move. But if everybody stays healthy and everybody's playing at a decent level, don't let those guys rot on the bench. They showed they can play. Let them go in there and stay sharp, because God forbid if something does happen to somebody, now it wasn't just, yeah, it was a game, but boy, that was a month ago. Ah, man, he's got to knock off the rust and dust. And so if you've got players that, a meritocracy, if you've got players that during the course of practice and then in game tape have shown that they should play in the National Football League, let them play. I've seen situations in college football, they'll play 10 guys. They'll have two lines. They'll have shifts like in hockey. Boom, boom. The whole offensive line will shift. That's happened in games that I've covered. So, I mean, there's two schools of thought, and I think the school that you go to is based on how many students do you have that can pass the test. You know, I mean, if you have smart enough guys that can go play and play well enough, let them play.
Billy Price got a game ball.
Yep.
After last week's victory over Tennessee. Here's my question. How has his play in the last two games compared to Trey Hopkins' play before that?
You know, I think, you know, solid. I think he's been solid. You know, I think that the penalty issue has graded him down, and rightfully so. You know, you can't have holding penalties. You can't be jumping. You know, as you pointed out during the game, they went into the game with 16 false start penalties, and they got two more. They were number one in the NFL, most penalized with false starts, 32nd. They're remaining there, which is not a good place to be. So, you know, that will hurt you. But I don't think Billy's play necessarily should unseat Trey Hopkins because he got a concussion, but he's playing well.
Before we get to our first half of the season awards, complete with authentic award show music, here's a quick reminder that the Bengals Booth podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. It's light and refreshing with a hint of fruit flavor.
Burrow will look to throw. He's going to throw it up the sideline. Wow. Back shoulder throw. Auden Tate comes down with the ball on the Titans sideline. It's a catch, and that should be coffin nails.
Bam, bam, bam.
We've hit the halfway point of the season, and you know what that means? It's time to hand out some first half awards. Not the Grammys. We call these the Shrammies in honor of Bengals media relations assistant Pete Schramm,
yes,
who goes above and beyond to help us out. So
he's great.
Our first half Shrammies.
Love it.
Let's start with the MVP. Who's your MVP in the first half, Lap?
Well, I have to go with Joe Burrow. You know, Joe Burrow is living up to and beyond, I think, what people expected. Dan, he made more than a handful of like jaw-dropping throws and plays. I mean, the touch he puts on, the feathery touch that he puts on these passes with the arc that just drops down out of the sky to these tight little spots, these windows are incredible. And he's got so much confidence in a short period of time. I mean, without OTAs and mini camp and training camp and, you know, they did have some training camp, but no preseason games. He's gotten to a level of trust and confidence with his receivers that is remarkable. I mean, everybody said he's mature beyond his years. He's playing beyond his years. There are veteran quarterbacks in the National Football League that are watching Joe Burrow and play and saying, my God, does he have poise and confidence?
How about the music?
Love it.
Jimmy Sandy getting it done, who's producing for us today. That is the theme music for the Shrammies. My MVP is obviously Joe Burrow as well. He's got to be. He's on a pace to pass for more than 4,500 yards as a rookie, which would be a Bengals record and a rookie record. But here's the one other thing I'm going to add that has wowed me about Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. And we knew this about him, but when you see it face-to-face, it really does resonate. The toughness.
Yeah.
28 sacks, 66 quarterback hits, keeps getting up with a smile on his face, firing a strike on the next play. So for all of the reasons you described and a few from me, a well-deserving first-half MVP.
My next guy would be his number one, Tyler Boyd. 36 first-down receptions, tied for most in the NFL. 37 first downs overall, 36 are receiving, and he's moving the chains. And he is Joe Burrow's guy. It's very obvious that they have something special brewing.
So he's your second most valuable player.
He would be, yes.
And mine would be Jesse Bates. I'll take one from defense. Yep. Highest graded safety in the NFL, according to Pro Football Focus, by a wide margin, more than 10 points in their system. Couple of interceptions, 8 pass breakups. The passer rating on passes thrown to him in coverage or when he's in coverage, 22.1. That's how good he's been as a pass defender. Younger than Joe Burrow. He is my second most valuable player.
My second most valuable, just edged out Carlos Dunlap by a skosh, yeah.
By a skosh. All right, biggest surprise of the first half, Dave Lapham, fire away.
The biggest surprise of the first half is what occurred in last week's game, the offensive line, playing to the level they did. Dan, I cannot tell you how hard it is for them to accomplish what they accomplished. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Honestly, you know, as a former lineman, I look at it and I look at the tape and I'm like, this is historic. I mean, you have 80% of the guys have not even a handful. Now, Spain had starts, 6 years of experience, but not next to these guys. And I'm telling you, it's not as easy as people think. It's not like rolling out of bed and line up next to a guy. And you show up on Friday and you have a walkthrough in the head coach's office with the line coach and the assistant line coach and some of the offensive line members, and they're giving you a crash course on terminology and language. And, you know, then they realize, yeah, this guy does understand football. He sees the big picture. He understands the concepts here. I think we're going to be okay. And then, you know, the next day or the day after that walkthrough, the very next day, you're on the football field, and Shaq Calhoun, God love him, jumps offside, whiffs on Clowney, and I think Jim Turner says, like Paul Brown used to say, the game's a little too big for you right now. I'm going to the bullpen. Bring in the right-hander. Actually, Spain's left-handed. He's in that left-handed stance. Bring in the lefty, and I feel good about him. And the way he played, come on. I mean, I do remember, I mentioned this before, Mike Wilson got traded to Seattle on a Wednesday, and he played on a Sunday. The advantage he had, Blair Bush was the center. Blair Bush knew the exact same calls that Mike Wilson knew with the Bengals, so he would say to Mike Wilson, what we're doing here is this is what it was in Cincinnati. So he had a translator that was like a UN translator. I mean, it was much easier. Spain didn't have that luxury, you know? And, man, to do what he did and everybody else that stepped up and played in that game, to me, by far, that was the biggest surprise of the first half of the season.
My biggest surprise is also an offensive lineman. And I'm going to caution people who might be listening in their cars, they're driving home, have both hands on the wheel when I say this, Bobby Hart. Mm-hmm. Coaches always say he's better than you think. He's better than Pro Football Focus says. Well, guess what? Pro Football Focus finally agrees. I'm not here to make the case that Bobby Hart is great. We know he's not. But Pro Football Focus has him ranked as the 38th best tackle in the NFL so far this year, ahead of
Jake Matthews, Anthony Costanzo, Colton Miller, Taylor Lewan, and others. Jonah Williams is 27th best, so a little bit better than Bobby. Easily best among the first-year tackles, but the point I'm making is he's actually been okay.
I think he's having the best year he's had as a Bengal. There's no doubt about that. And I think what he did in the offseason to prepare himself for the season and the commitment that he made, I think, are paying off. It was sad to see him get hurt because I know the line coaches believe in him. They are in his corner without question. I mean, one's rubbing him down, the other's taking care of cuts as the cut man in the corner, man. They're working on him and getting him ready to go. So there's no question in my mind that I think as guys come back from injury, Jonah Williams with the stinger, Bobby Hart with the knee, you know, they're not gonna lose their jobs because of injury and five offensive linemen playing a really good football game. Again, I'm not trying to besmirch or belittle the Tennessee Titans, but they ain't no Pittsburgh Steelers. They ain't no Baltimore Ravens. And these other guys have experienced it, gone through it. And there's something to be said for that because I'm telling you, when you get into that situation, you think you might be ready, but then it's rush hour, and there's so many people and doing so many things, and what were the rules? And that's the other thing that I want to, you know, give some credit to Jim Turner and the rules. Simple. A few rules applying to so many different things. That is one of the biggest reasons they were able to accomplish what they accomplished because Jim Turner makes his system KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. Don't overcomplicate it. And guys were able to adapt and adjust very, very quickly. And I think it's a tribute to the teacher who gave you the tools and taught you how to properly implement them.
The Shrammies continue with your biggest disappointment of the first half.
My biggest disappointment would be everybody they spent money on in free agency is on IR. You know, I mean, Trey Waynes. We haven't even seen him yet. You know, DJ Reader. Mike Daniels on IR. Everybody they paid money to get in free agency has been hurt. And then throw in Geno Atkins, you know, with the shoulder injury. The defensive line I thought was going to be a strength of the football team. And, you know, the thing unravels with Carlos. He's now a Seattle Seahawk. God bless him. Good luck to him. Hopefully both parties benefit. But, you know, Geno playing like a one-arm paper hanger. And that's hard to hang that wallpaper with one arm. It's difficult to play defensive tackle with one arm, I can tell you that. And then the injuries. That's my biggest disappointment is the defense has never looked the way I thought it was going to look because everybody they paid big money for in free agency. And then Xavier Suafilo as well. I mean, my biggest disappointment is free agent dough, and it was a bunch of it spent, well over $100 million. They have not gotten a return on the investment for themselves, teammates, and fans.
My biggest disappointment, and it pains me to say it, is A.J. Green.
Mm-hmm.
Largely because I thought he was going to be the old A.J. Mm-hmm. Green and just take off and look like he looked pre all of his injuries, and obviously that hasn't been the case. Now, the good news is it's not too late. He had the great two-game stretch against Indy and Cleveland where he had 15 catches for nearly 200 yards. But in the Baltimore game, we saw something we thought we would never see.
Right.
Him loaf on that interception, sulk on the bench. That's not the A.J. Green we know and love. So, again, it's not too late, but to this point, clearly it's been a disappointment.
Sure, no doubt. And he'd be the first one to agree with you on that, Dan. And he basically chastised himself after the Baltimore game saying, that's not me, I can't do that. I think he realized the error in his ways.
Last category in the Shrammies, the play of the first half of the season. What do you have?
The play of the first half of the season, my gosh. I mean, there's a lot of Joe Burrow plays, you know. Is it the Fran Tarkenton like Houdini, make you miss a bunch of scrambles, you know, making guys miss and serpentining around like Fran Tarkenton and throwing the football. You know, I think that might be one. But so many times, Dan, so many times. I think of the Seathan Carter throw. I mean, that couldn't have been in any – better spot. The Tyler Boyd throw, that couldn't have been in any better spot for him to, and on the other end, for him to not even see the football and then react, the eye-hand coordination of Tyler Boyd and the reflexes of Tyler Boyd, just unbelievable. And Joe Burrow trusted him to do that. I just think so many plays, so many throws of his, he has put in spots where it's like, are you kidding me? Are you serious? The sideline throws to T. Higgins. I just think that Joe Burrow has had many moments of, wow, I mean, pinpoint spots.
I would add the third down pass to Auden Tate.
Yep.
That we heard earlier in the show, the coffin nails play from last week. But if I had to pick a play from the first half, I would pick one of the ones you were talking about, that Tyler Boyd catch last week, fourth quarter, Bengals up 10, 9 minutes to go, third down and 9. Burrow somehow maneuvers in the pocket and throws to Boyd when he's basically tied up by a defender and not looking. He turns and the ball is there on top of his left shoulder.
Yeah.
Great throw, incredible anticipation, unbelievable catch. One of the most remarkable quarterback to wide receiver combos I've ever seen.
And for Joe Burrow to pull the trigger on it, the faith and trust in Tyler Boyd, because there should have been a flag. I mean, Tyler Boyd, after the catch, he went right to the official and was like, are you kidding me? You call nothing on that? And then the safety was, you know, coming, closing from the backside. If Tyler Boyd does not react to that football, Joe Burrow is risking a red zone interception. That's trust. That's confidence. And I just can't wait to see the wide receiver core, including A.J. Green, as a whole, the arrow go up in their efforts with Joe Burrow in the second half of the season.
Jimmy, is the theme music from the Shrammy still available to wrap up this segment?
I love it.
That concludes the Shrammies. Now, we're going to take an in-depth look at the first half of Joe Burrow's first season with two former NFL quarterbacks. Up first, from the NFL Today on CBS and Inside the NFL on Showtime, it's former Super Bowl MVP, Phil Simms. Well, Phil, you know where we want to start, and that is with Joe Burrow. What do you think through 8 games?
Wow. What do I think? Well, I can honestly say I've watched every Joe Burrow throw this year, so I don't have to lie. And I liked him, of course, coming out, you know, for many reasons. One, just his movement, his size, played in a pro offense, just abused, just so many great things. But all those things I talk about, and I just said this to my son today, he's better at all those things now than he was at LSU. Each week I see something, I go, oh, my God, the anticipation. You know, he's throwing a guy going over the middle, coming over the middle of the field, and where's he? Oh, there he comes. And it's just, of course, he learned that, you know, being a point guard in basketball, playing like he did at LSU with Joe Brady, and he puts it all together. And it's been a surprise with that, but I got to honestly say his physical ability, I think his arm, it looks even better in the NFL than I expected. And, you know, the great word for him in the pocket and all that, he is just slippery. A big guy that just has it, man. He feels the pocket great. I need to tell him to come up here and teach Daniel Jones. That would help the Giants out a lot. But it's been tremendous. There's nothing else to say.
You know, you were great. That Super Bowl where you were MVP, to have your best game in the biggest game of your life, I just can't imagine what that must have felt like. But Mike Pope, who coached with the Giants when you were there, coached with the Bengals. And I talked to Mike Pope about you as a quarterback, and I said, if you had to give me the best quality that Phil Simms had at the quarterback position, what would you say? He goes, let me tell you something, Lapham. Tough. This dude, tough. Might have been the toughest guy on the football team. Joe Burrow has that. People don't realize Joe Burrow gets knocked around like a pinata and just, you know, give me more. And that coach Mike Pope said, Phil Simms may have been as tough a man as I've ever met. What do you think about that, man?
Well, listen, that's nice compliments on Mike. Great friends, unbelievable coach through his career, all that. If I didn't play that way, Parcells would have benched me anyway. So, my coaching in the NFL was the same as it was in high school and college. I mean, I had the same guy all three. In fact, Bill Parcells was probably the nicest one of the group. But, you know, Joe Burrow, if you go back and look at his LSU games, which I watched them very closely, he took beatings down there too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he playing Auburn, Alabama. I mean, the pocket was tight. They collapsed it a lot. As great as LSU was, you know, in the SEC, you play quarterback. Maybe Alabama is the only exception I can think of. You're going to get hit by NFL linemen. And, yeah, his look, his calm demeanor and all that stuff, that is a great point to how tough he is. When they played Baltimore this year, now that was across – that went over the line for me. I was, like, really mad when the game was over.
Right.
And Boomer goes, why are you so mad? I go, well, it's too much hitting at the end of the game when the game is over. And I was just really, you know, and Boomer goes, I know, Boomer, he's your man crush, or one of them. But I, when the game was over, I was starting to worry about Joe Burrow taking too many hits because all you got to do is be unlucky one time.
True.
But he's weathered the storm. The amount of dropbacks, the amount of throws is just going to – it's just speeding his career up. And, you know, how many times can you rush the quarterback as a defensive lineman, guys? I mean, that's the other thing. And the wide receiving group, oh, my gosh, it's tremendous. But they're getting even better because of all the repetitions in the game that they have, which has been fun to see. And to see T. Higgins who's come along here lately is just adding to the group.
Talking to Phil Simms from CBS, what is Boomer like when you guys are hanging out on the set watching games between your segments and he's watching Burrow?
Well, listen, he played enough down there in Cincinnati, so you know. He's arrogant, thinks he's the best-looking person in the world. What else can I say about Boomer? I'm a little disappointed. He actually lost weight and trimmed up this year, so that was disappointing. But, he's great. And he focuses, of course. He does a radio show up here, so he's always on the Giants and Jets yelling and, you know, screaming about that. And, of course, is right there with it. Did you see that throw by Joe Burrow? Did you see it, Phil? Yeah, Boomer. I'm watching it. Yeah, I got it. You know, but whatever. So he's really into it. He loves the fact that the Bengals are back on the map. You know, I do too. Isn't it something? The Browns and the Bengals are extremely relevant again, and I don't know, you wouldn't think this, but it just seems to be a great thing for the league.
I agree. I agree with you. Quarterback play, problem solving. How big of a factor, and Joe Burrow, in my mind, is a great problem solver. I mean, when he looks over the field, he sees where the problems may exist, and avoids, you know, he solves problems. How big of a factor is that for a young quarterback?
You know, Dave, it's almost really unfathomable to. Don't say words that I can't pronounce. It's hard to believe, you know, that what he does. In other words, it's so above where I was probably ever in my career. And my first couple years, I mean, come on. It was just drop back. And why'd you throw that ball there? Well, thought I could get it in there.
Yeah.
Well, okay. All right. You know, I mean, it got intercepted. But it's just his whole thing about having that great feel, seeing the defense, and really understanding the defense. Of course, now and late in my career, you know, you couldn't fool me. When you lined up on defense, I go, oh, well, the slot guy's going to blitz. And you're 9 yards back instead of 10, you idiot. You think I can't see that? I'm really being serious.
Right.
The safety could line up 12 yards. I go, you know, he's usually at 14. So this is telling me, you know, you knew right away.
Sure.
And he already has that factor in him. I know he can. I can tell. He looks over the defense quick. He's already got his, you know, not his mind made up, but he has a feel for where he's going to go. And then he can find the next receiver so fast, which he did in college. And then when he's going to get hit and he knows there's trouble in the pocket, he immediately, before he falls apart, can find the outlet guy and just get rid of the football, which is, again, the repetitions he had at LSU that last year, but it's natural to him too. I mean, if you just think what he'd be like if he had 3 years of LSU's offense in him when he came to the NFL, he'd be, well, I don't know if he could be any better, but it might even have been easier for him. Who knows?
You were good as a rookie, Phil. I mean, a lot of quarterbacks, their rookie year stats were brutal. Peyton Manning still holds the record for rookie interceptions. John Elway completed 47% of his passes as a rookie. Giants were 6-5 in the games you started as a rookie.
Right.
But are you amazed that so many guys now succeed right away? I mean, Justin Herbert's got a passer rating of 104.5. Burrow's been great. Oh. You know, Kyler Murray was terrific last year. Does that stun you?
Well, yeah, I'm a little stunned, but I understand the dynamics of it. I mean, listen, what do I do during the off season with my youngest son, Matt? We train quarterbacks, and we have a lot of them. And I have high school kids that if you watch them work out, and if I didn't tell you, go, what major? Is he going to Ohio State? Or you just can't believe because they're brought up differently. I mean, we have guys that run left and throw to the right sideline. We have them going, you know, we had a kid, you'll see the video on Showtime, I don't know, whatever, but we teach a lot of stuff, especially like moving, throwing, awkward stuff and all that. The kids can run and jump, and I'm not exaggerating, we have some kids that can throw it jumping straight up in the air, throw it over 60 yards.
Jeez.
But it's a teaching lesson on how to use your body to throw and all that. That's why we do it. My son showed it to me one day. I said, wow, man, I don't know about this. You know, these kids. And they started doing it. And all of a sudden, I was like, this, I got to film it. You know, of course, I film everything. but these young kids are getting such great teaching. And maybe not up here in the Northeast. And I don't know how it is down there in the area you guys live in. But Texas, California, they throw the ball so much in high school, and then they continue to throw a lot in the college. So they're coming into the NFL. I mean, man, they got it. Yeah. They feel it and know. And the teaching's better for the mechanics a little bit, but just the teaching of the offense and the rule changes too, of course, are a huge advantage now to these quarterbacks. I mean, it really is. Spreading the ball out, easy throws, easy reads, you know, about 30% of the time, I think it's really easy for the quarterback. But it's those other moments when it gets rough and you got to be very instinctive and have talent is what really separates you from the rest. But these Joe Burrow, we're going to have a group that comes out every year that are really quality, ready to start franchise quarterbacks. It's just a question, will they get in the right spot? Will they get in the right system and have an organization that's good enough to let you show everything that you have, and that is the challenge, of course, now for the Bengals and the Chargers, that can they get the organization and the team in a position for these guys to really show their talent and win games under pressure and all that.
Our second in-depth look at Joe Burrow comes from former Bengals quarterback JT O'Sullivan, who has a channel on YouTube called The QB School, where he breaks down video of quarterback play. It's outstanding, and this week, for the second time this season, he put Joe Burrow under his microscope. Go to YouTube and type in Super Burrow, and it will pop right up. About 25 minutes of great insight. Earlier this year, after the Bengals played the Eagles back in Week 3, JT posted a video titled Joe Burrow Becoming NFL Joe Burrow, and that week, he spoke to Lapp and me.
When you watch him, what jumps out on tape?
Initially, if you go back and watch the college stuff, specifically last year, I think what jumps out on tape is probably the best season that any quarterback has ever played at the college level. And, you know, you go back and kind of peel apart and analyze why that is. I think that there are things that you're already seeing in Cincinnati as far as his pocket savvy, his ability to be technical and smooth within the pocket, two hands on the ball, shuffling, staying alive, those types of things. He's a better athlete than you probably think initially watching him. And then he's just so ridiculously accurate last year in their scheme. And now they had some dudes out there as well, but he was the one orchestrating it. And, you know, those are the things that jump off for me, the accuracy, the pocket presence, all those things. And so, you know, now you just look to see how that translates into the league. It's obviously going to translate really well, but it's, you know, it's not quite the same as being around a loaded LSU at the Division I level. And so it's about bridging his capacity to play the position at a really high level with what Sunday's call for you to do at that position.
You know, the thing that was impressive to me in college watching him, now it's translated so far as, like you'd say, with the pocket presence and his ability athletically. He's got some quick twitch to him. I mean, he was an all-state point guard in high school. I mean, he had basketball opportunities to play at the next level. So he's got some athletic ability, and he's making these guys in the SEC, you know, quick feet, making a miss, slide step, and stepping up in the pocket, and stepping up to vacate instead of just vacating, stepping up and then vacating. And, you know, he did that in the game. It's always everything in athletics starts with your feet and ends with your hands, right? Everything with Joe Burrow starts with his feet and ends with his hands. He's got unbelievable feet in terms of, you know, mechanics, extending and creating, all that kind of stuff.
Across athletics, it's always from the ground up. I think for a long time, you know, most people in the quarterback sphere would say playing quarterback is absolutely from the ground up. I think it's evolved a little bit more to be center out now, kind of torso-driven, core-driven. But you're absolutely right. The thing that jumps out on the film for him is his ability to be smooth, always ready to throw, technically, you know, efficient from within the pocket, and just so consistent. I mean, that's the thing about it. You know, I can't ever remember somebody coming at that level, the college level, the season he had last year, and looking like such a polished pro guy within the pocket. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those things aren't going to go away. And so now it's just about being able to do it in a longer season against better competition when everything's probably a little bit more equal out there.
We're talking to former Bengals quarterback JT O'Sullivan. I highly recommend subscribing to the QB School, his YouTube channel, looking at quarterback play in the NFL and also college football leading up to the draft. Joe Burrow has been sacked 14 times in three games. He's been hit about 30. When you watched that game against Philadelphia, how bad was that protection in comparison to what other quarterbacks are facing these days?
It's not great. It's not sustainable, I think, is probably the more important element, you know, as opposed to looking at the first few weeks. Now, also, you know, even, you know, whatever sector you're analyzing the Bengals' performance and Joe Burrow specifically up to this point, it's hard not to jump to conclusions, even if it's just a three-game sample size. But getting hit like that is probably not sustainable over the course of a season, let alone a career. And so it's about building in combination, taking advantage of what Joe does really well with what they're doing scheme-wise with what their personnel is up front. And so some of the elements are, you know, about knowing how to get the ball out of your hands quicker. Some of it is concept driven, meaning we need to design plays and have the offense structure to get the ball out quicker. And then it's about your guys winning on the perimeter as well. And so, and then he'll get faster playing as he gets more reps, like anybody with experience. And so it's all of those factors combining into an aggregate to allow him to play at a high level for a really long time. Cause I don't think anybody, you know, is looking for a short career from a franchise type guy like that.
How does a quarterback determine the balancing act of, okay, I'm athletic, I can extend and create? Like you did a good job on it, the naked bootleg, and he came back on his own. When you come back on your own, you're on your own, you know, and he took a shot from Malik Jackson. So how do you balance, all right, I want to try to make a play, but I don't want to put myself in the danger it looks like I might be putting myself into. How does that, if you're skilled enough and athletic enough to do it like he is, how do you make those decisions? Where's that balance? Where's the tipping point?
Well, you know, the tipping point right there is you're going to get smacked.
Right.
And you're going to learn pretty hard, pretty quick. I think it's a combination of his support staff, meaning the coaches, the other quarterbacks, his ability to learn from watching other people. You know, I think the thing about it is the position is getting so much more athletic across the league. You know, the best players now or the best athletes are playing quarterback younger. And so the position across the board, across all sectors of football, is getting more athletic.
Right.
And so you see guys like Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Aaron, to a certain extent for a long time, getting outside the pocket, making ridiculous off-platform throws, athletic throws, staying alive, and you think you can do that. And he can do that. But the guys who are chasing you are just better, faster, bigger, stronger than you're used to. And so you have to learn that, hey, if I'm going to come back, you know, that's not on my offensive line. If I'm going to reverse field, that's on me.
Yep.
And that doesn't mean you can never do it. You right. can do it. But you just have to know, like, hey, maybe I don't take quite as sharp as angle downhill. Maybe I peek. You know, you see Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson guys kind of, when they go to turn, they'll peek the other way off yep. the side of their helmet. Now, uh-huh. I can tell you that's not easy to do. And just because you can peek doesn't mean you can make the turn. You know, for a long time I would peek, but, you know, I'd get smacked because I can't move as fast as a defensive end. And so it's one thing to be able to know it. It's another to be able to do it. And then it's another to be able to do it consistently on Sundays.
A couple more questions for JT O'Sullivan. You were a Bengal in 2009. You spent time with a lot of NFL teams, whether it was on the roster or in practice squad or in training camp. Also played in NFL Europe and the CFL. Mm-hmm. What stood out, JT, about that 2009 season where you backed up Carson Palmer?
That was probably one of the more fun teams that I was around. And what I mean, I don't mean winning and going to the playoffs, that obviously helps, but just the group of dudes on that team, is the nicest way I can say it. You know, I felt like there were a lot of guys that were all kind of around the same area of their career, all cared about ball, all, you know, came together to really make a dent in that division that year. And it was great. You know, it started and stopped with Carson at the time, and he played at a really high level, played hurt, was able to do things with that offense that I think took advantage of what we had on the perimeter and what we had up front. And it was a blast, and I really enjoyed my time in the real Sin City.
Sin City, I like it. Final question. Appreciate you taking the time you have with us. This has been outstanding. A young guy like Joe Burrow comes into the league and manipulating defenses with his eyes. I mean, usually that's not something a rookie quarterback does. Jesse Bates, who's a very intelligent safety on the Bengals defense, said during training camp, man, Burrow, he's really good with his eyes, man. You know, I've learned the kid, he'll play with you with those eyes. Is that unusual? I mean, to be that skilled, even at that, with your eyes at that coming out of college?
I probably think it is. I really do think that the position across the board is getting better. You see so many younger guys, you know, up to 7-on-7 circuits, and they're just getting more reps at more things that you're used to doing on Sundays. And Sundays have changed too. It's a little bit more spread out. Concepts, you know, information, whether it's a YouTube channel or better coaching across the board, you know, you have better access to better information. And so I remember going to the NFL, and there were concepts that I had never played before, where now Joe Burrow is probably familiar with a lot of things that he's being asked to do. Now, it doesn't mean that you can then go out there and do it in an NFL practice or game like he does. But I think collectively the position is getting better, but I still think it's impressive that he's able to do that, even though, you know, I think, you know, manipulating people with your eyes usually happens in zone coverage. You have to be really comfortable with the concepts. You have to know why you're manipulating someone, and you also have to have the rhythm and the timing to still deliver the ball on time. So it's right. One thing to look someone off. It's another thing to come back and be on time where you're trying to go. And so it's never just the one-off thing. For me, with Joe Burrow, the thing that's so impressive is just the package and the combination of things that he's able to do within the pocket. I just never really seen from someone that young to be that consistently elite at it.
My thanks to Phil Simms and JT O'Sullivan. And here's a quick reminder to join Lap and me for the Bengals Pep Rally Show, Friday from 3 to 6 on ESPN 1530. That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.